Welcome back, everybody, to Giants Goal Line as we're cruising along to the stretch run of the NFL season. The Giants are certainly cruising, having won four straight games now after their 21-20 win over the Cincinnati Bengals on Monday night, a tremendous game for them, where they had some real championship ingredients on display, especially in the fourth quarter, an aggressive blitzing defense that helped seal the game with back-to-back sacks of Andy Dalton right on the final drive for the Bengals. And how about this, a running game that out of nowhere asserted itself with two huge first downs in the final few minutes that allowed the Giants to run out the clock. And I honestly can't remember the last time I saw them do that. That was an amazing sight. So they are now sitting at 6-3. That is the third best record in the NFC, and they are in a tight wild card race, but they're leading it. And they are staring at games against the battered Chicago Bears, who are a miserable 2-7, and the awful, awful Cleveland Browns at 0-10. Honestly, the Giants have already won as many games as they did last year and the year before, and there is no excuse for them not to be 8-3 when they head to the Pittsburgh Steelers to begin December. So if you haven't started planning for that playoff berth yet, well, go ahead. You could start doing it, maybe knock on wood a little bit, but it's looking very, very good for the Giants if they don't blow it. We'll talk about their prospects in a little while. We'll take a look around the NFC East. We'll also be joined in a few minutes by former SNY Giants reporter Mike Garofalo, who is now a national NFL reporter for the NFL Network. And we'll get his take on whether the Giants are a real threat in the NFC and maybe if there are any comparisons to the miracle runs of 2007, 2011. He got to share those with me as a reporter back then on the beat. And, you know, we both know how those Giants were counted out. Didn't look great, and then they went on an unexpected run, so who knows? Yeah, I guess you can start dreaming if you want. But before we get to that, let's start with this, our three headlines for Week 11, and we begin with the gambler, Ben McAdoo. Boy, he's flirted all season long with this aggressive nature of his, and I know that people don't want to see it because they complain about his play calling, and week after week I write and tell you that it's all about the players, that he can't throw the ball down the field if Eli Manning doesn't have time, and he can't, do crazy things with his offense because players are dropping passes and all that. They're all real issues. I think he would do a lot more if he had the players performing the way they should. And I think you got a taste of it last night. The big gamble he took, of course, was in the beginning of the fourth quarter, fourth and goal from the 3, the Giants down 6. Every bit of common sense tells you to kick a field goal there, get within 3 points. I certainly said and tweeted that I would take the field goal there. Ben McAdoo gambles anyway, and he throws a pass. And, of course, the Giants score the game-winning touchdown. A huge play that obviously won the game, but the players felt the energy. You got to remember, these guys never go into a game thinking they want to be passive. They want to go for it every chance they get. And when the coach says, "I believe in you," and doesn't hesitate, boy, that just lights a fire under the players, especially the ones in the tougher positions along the offensive line. They just could feel the energy, and they weren't going to be denied after that. It was more than that, though, for Ben McAdoo. It was winning the coin toss at the beginning of the game and not deferring. He handed the ball to his struggling offense and said, "Go get me a touchdown." And what do? They go on an 80-yard drive. He gives them a little faith. They pay him back. It was 3rd and 6 in the fourth quarter when he runs the ball with the worst rushing attack in the league. And what happens? Rashad Jennings bursts through the middle for 9 yards and a first down. They actually pick up 2 key first downs in the fourth quarter to run out the clock. And it was giving Steve Spagnuolo the freedom to blitz and pressure the quarterback in the fourth quarter when the Bengals could have easily beaten the Giants with one big play down the field to get into field goal range, and they run out the clock. Instead, the Giants defense turns up the heat, and what do? Back-to-back sacks of Andy Dalton on the Bengals' last two plays force a punt. It just shows you that Ben McAdoo is not a conservative, passive coach. He is a go-for-it guy. And if you wonder why his players like him so much, that is a big reason right there. Headline number 2 for the Giants, running on empty. Now, I know everybody's excited about the rushing attack after what it did on Monday night. They had those two big first downs that I just talked about, the key one on third and six, another one that Rashad Jennings picks up 25 yards. But let's really, really look at what the Giants did. 122 total yards, that's good. A season-high 87 for Rashad Jennings, that's good. But it is really, really important to note that he had 53 yards before his final two carries, just 53. And McAdoo still called 45 pass plays to 25 runs, and that split was actually 45 to 20 before the last series when they ran out the clock. Now, the last runs count, the fourth quarter counts, and it counts for a lot. But the bottom line is that this is what I think is going to hurt the Giants in January. This is a team that can't run the ball efficiently, consistently. It is incredibly one-dimensional, and defenses know it. It makes it a lot easier for them to play against them. If the Giants want to have any kind of playoff success, they are especially on the road, and the way the Cowboys are playing, the Giants might be a wild card team, might have to go on the road. They need to find a consistent run game, some actual push from the offensive line, and again, if they can do it in the fourth quarter, that's fantastic, but they need to do it for the rest of the game, too. Otherwise, it's going to be a long year. Remember, by the way, we're going to talk about some comparisons with some championship teams in a little bit. The 2011 Giants, the worst rushing team in football, but they ran the ball down the stretch. With the four games to go, they turned that around, and that was what fueled their playoff success. And the number three headline for the Giants, filling up the sack. A really, really good question to come out of this game is, was this the one that finally gets Olivier Vernon and Jason Pierre-Paul going the way we think they're going to go? Now, the Giants have just 21 sacks on the season, and that's not a lot. JPP has just 1.5, and Vernon, the Giants' $85 million man, is only 3, though, to be fair, he was playing with a hand and wrist injury for most of the year. But on Monday night, Vernon had 10 tackles and a sack and a quarterback hit, and JPP didn't have a sack, but he had 2 quarterback hits. Giants had 3 sacks overall, hit Andy Dalton 6 times, though I counted more than that. The stat sheet says 6. But more importantly, and especially from JPP and Vernon, they seem to get consistent pressure, and that includes pressure from inside, from Snacks Harrison, who had a half sack and a quarterback hit as well. Maybe this is the start of the pass rush that Steve Spagnuolo was always hoping he'd have, and the performance might even be the reason why he continued to be aggressive in the fourth quarter, which resulted in that first sack that should have been shared by about 7 players on the Bengals' second-to-last play, and then Vernon's sack on the last play, which snuffed out the Bengals' last drive. And I've said this many, many times before, the two most important things for any NFL team are having a quarterback and being able to disrupt the quarterback. And the Giants have been okay, not great, at disrupting opposing quarterbacks this season. But if they can get that pass rush really, really going, well, again, it's early to say this, and I'm not going to get too excited or get you too excited, but and I'm not going to make any comparisons either because that would be a little crazy at this stage. But the rebirth of the pass rush, that's how their championship runs in 2007 and in 2011 began. It started with the defensive line. I was there for both of those runs, and so was my next guest, who back then covered the Giants for the Newark Star-Ledger and was my predecessor on the Giants beat here at SNY. He is now one of the finest NFL reporters in the country, working hard for the NFL Network, and I know he's a familiar voice for all of you, and that's my good friend Mike Garofalo. Mike, thanks for joining me. How are you doing?
I'm great, Ralph. Appreciate you having me, Matt.
Oh, it's my pleasure. I'm sorry we're a little late getting this started, but as you know, Tom Coughlin's still giving his Ring of Honor speech. I couldn't shut him up.
As soon as he said, "I'm not going to get cheated," I knew what was going to happen there, and that he was going to push the limits. I was leaving at halftime because I had to be up to do our morning show, and I wasn't really covering the game. So I said, well, while I'm down here, I might as well go and watch this on the field. And I was there when the head referee was looking at the guy. There's a guy that wears all turquoise, and he's like the guy that kind of signals to them when they're coming back from commercial and all that stuff. And I'm watching the two of them interacting, kind of shrugging back and forth like, we're going to start the second half here? What are you going to do? Why are we going to tell this guy to stop? And mercifully, he stopped right when they were about to kind of walk toward the stage to move it along, because that would have been extremely awkward.
Yo, no kidding. It was a beautiful moment, though, and he definitely did not care. He was going to get his speech in no matter what.
Yeah, I love it. I mean, it's funny because As I said to Chris Snee when I saw him coming off after the ceremony, I said, can you imagine if you guys were playing and you come out for the second half and you're not ready to go because something's happening on the field? He would have lost his mind if he was a coach.
Oh, absolutely. No doubt about that at all. And, you know, you obviously were there for part of the Coughlin era and the glory years. And,
yeah.
You know, I know we're supposed to be impartial, but I admit, seeing Tom Coughlin and Ernie Accorsi and Justin Tuck go into the Ring of Honor, you know, guys that we watched and chronicled their careers, the highs and the lows. I got a little bit emotional watching that happen. What were your thoughts seeing three guys that you, well, you didn't cover Accorsi, I guess, but at least two of the guys you covered. Oh, you did cover. Okay, there you go.
I got three. I came in at 04. I came in training camp in 04 when you guys had already kind of gone through the offseason and seen some of the drama that developed early in the offseason with Strahan and Tiki and the workouts and the fact that he was just pushing them from the moment that he arrived. But by the time I came in, he was kind of locked in training camp and he was in that mode and we never really had a chance to sit down and kind of talk a little bit. And we didn't really until, did we have any of that off season? I know we did after the 06 season, Ralph. We all had our half hour sit downs with him. And that was really probably the first time that I got to talk to him outside of a press conference setting and see him kind of relax. And, you know, that season, he learned a lot. I think we learned a lot. I know the players learned a lot. And it was really, again, we're not sitting there rooting for the team, but to watch that whole transformation and see a guy who was so set in his ways for almost 60 years to that point, I think he was south of 60, if I'm not mistaken, at that point, to see him change his ways and bend a little bit. And then to see all the success that came because of it was a fascinating thing to watch and a good thing for all of us who saw it.
So their teams also taught me a valuable lesson, which is basically that I never promised my wife that there's no way the Giants are going to the Super Bowl. So, you know, we can make vacation plans in January and February because, you know, both of those teams, their Super Bowl teams, they were mediocre, kind of finding their ways, maybe not even good. And then they went on this incredible run. And, you know, I wonder, I don't think when I look at these Giants that they have the makings of a championship team. They can't run the ball. Their defense is okay. But, you know, I've been trying to think. I wonder if there might be a couple of little similar signs. Maybe I'm underestimating them the way I did in 07 and 11.
Yeah, I think that you don't – I mean, the 07 team, I still go back to that. People say – you know, there were some people in the organization that said, you know, yeah, after we beat Buffalo, we had a feeling. Buffalo was terrible. And that was a terrible game. It was an ugly game. Like, how did you come away from that game on Christmas Eve in the snow and the wind and all that stuff saying, oh, boy, this is a Super Bowl team? There's just no signs of that. But I'm sorry, it wasn't Christmas Eve. That was the 23rd, the day before Christmas Eve. But the Jets Christmas Eve game in 2011, I remember because people had said that about the 07 team, and I watched that game on Christmas Eve, I thought, okay, well, maybe this is the same kind of stuff that you're seeing, and that confidence can really grow for a team. And I thought, man, this team might go to the Super Bowl. This team could do the same thing. You need to see that kind of gel at the right time. I think it's kind of early in the season for this Giants team because the pieces are there. I mean, you've got a receiver that, even when he's doubled, can get open. That's a good piece. You've got a veteran quarterback who's accurate with the football, makes quick decisions, makes smart decisions for the most part. That's a good thing to have. The offensive line is the part that needs to come together, obviously. And you go to the defensive side of the ball, and all the pieces are there on defense. I really honestly do believe that. I look at that defense and say, that is a Super Bowl-caliber defense, especially since Olivier Vernon now is going to have more use of his hand, which he didn't have. And it's actually been impressive that he's done what he has done while playing with that broken or shattered hand or whatever you want to call it. So I do see the pieces in place. And if this offensive line can somehow come together, if they can somehow start to play better football more consistently, this team certainly does have all the pieces to make a run. I truly believe that.
Yeah, I mean, I'm kind of with you. I don't think they're there yet. I think the pieces are there. And the two things that I need to see get going are the two things that got going really both in 2007 and 11, but definitely in 2011 down the stretch. They need to run the ball more consistently and get that pass rush going. And if you can do that, and we know Eli Manning's underachieved, but we know what he can do. And with a guy like Odell Beckham, I have no doubt he could go on a big tear.
I do wonder, is it fair to say that they need to run the ball more? I'm with you. I'm looking at this thing. Well, how can they possibly do this? They need to be able to run the ball, especially since I covered the Eagles-Falcons game on Sunday, and the Eagles surprised everybody, including the Falcons, with the way that they came out and run the ball, because that's the way they determined going into the game. This is going to be our best attack against this team. I don't know that the Giants can do that. I don't know that they can sit there, and I don't know that they care to do that. I don't know that they want to be the team that says, okay, well, if we're going up against a team that we feel is weak in the front seven, we're gonna pound away. Maybe we'll run it a little bit more, but no, we're not going to be a run-heavy attack. And is that the smartest way to go about things? I don't know. And you know, maybe at some point in the next few years, they tailor their personnel to be able to do that a little bit more. I'm going to answer my own question and say, no, I don't think that it's in their strength to be able to run the ball here. And I do think that that could wind up being a problem for them, yes.
Well, now let's turn that to another team in the NFC East. The Dallas Cowboys obviously can run the ball really well. And to me, as a very old school type of guy, they're built like a team that can win in the winter, win in January, win in the playoffs because of that running game, because of their offensive line and the way they play football. Is there any team in the NFC East that can really make a run at them?
Yeah, listen, I think every team can. I really do. This division, now, my prediction coming in, I picked the Redskins to win the division. My thought was, nobody's going to run away with this thing, and it's going to be so tightly packed. And they're the team that I thought was the most balanced across the board. I really did. I'll stick with my pick at this point. You know, it's fine. I just did not expect a team at this point to have only one loss. But that being said, I thought the Eagles played the Cowboys extremely well. I thought the Redskins played the Cowboys extremely well. And we know that the Giants played them well. So the Giants beat them in week one. Mm-hmm. And that victory is looking better and better by the week. So you've got divisional games coming back up for the Cowboys, and it wouldn't surprise me if they went 1-2 in, I don't think they'll go 0-3, but I don't know that it would be a shocker if they went 1-2 in those games and then, you know, lose a game here and all of a sudden they come back to the pack. So I really believe that this thing is going to go down to the wire. Much as the Cowboys are out in front right now.
You know, I picked the Redskins, too, for exactly the same reason. I figured nobody was very good, and 9 wins might do it, and they'd get there based on experience and, you know, a conservative, somewhat game plan. I also didn't buy, the Cowboys I actually thought would be a little bit better if Tony Romo was still there. But once you got Dak Prescott in, I assumed the two rookie quarterbacks at some point would take a step back.
Yeah.
I've seen Carson Wentz do that a little bit, but not Dak Prescott yet, which has been pretty impressive.
No, it's gonna get interesting now. I mean, I'm looking at their schedule right now. Okay, Baltimore at home this weekend. Then they've got the Redskins on Thanksgiving, which thankfully we're gonna get a good game on Thanksgiving in Dallas, which we don't always get. Well, at least which should be a good game. Then at Minnesota, I know Minnesota's struggling right now, but that's no cupcake. And then they're at MetLife to face the Giants on Wednesday. Thursday? No. It's December 11th. Yeah. That's a Sunday.
Yeah.
So they're at the Giants on a Sunday night right now. They've got the Buccaneers at home. Okay. They got the Lions at home. The Lions are playing pretty good football. And then they're at the there are some good defenses coming up here, and there's some teams that are in playoff contention. I guess other than the Buccaneers, everybody else is in playoff contention. So I can't imagine that they're going to go 14-2 or 13. There are losses here in the second half of the schedule for the Cowboys. There have to be. I put them at around 12-4, I would say. And so can somebody get up there and go on a run and challenge them? Yeah, I just think that there are some teams that are going to pick them off here in the second half of the season.
Well, it'll be interesting to see. We'll follow you in your coverage of the league in the NFC East and find out where this goes. And I look forward to your induction into the Ring of Honor one of these days, Mike.
Don't hold your breath, bro.
All right, Mike, thanks so much for joining us. We appreciate it.
You got it, pal.
Again, that was Mike Garofalo, and you can follow him on Twitter at Mike Garofalo. And, of course, you can watch him on the NFL Network as he follows the entire league, including the Giants. And you want to pay attention to him as we hit the stretch run of this season. We talked a little bit about the NFC East, and Mike does think it's wide open, that somebody can make a little bit of a run at the 8-1 Dallas Cowboys. And he picked the Redskins like I did. Right now the Redskins are sitting at 5-3-1. The interesting thing about the NFC East is each team still has three division games left, and this is a division that tends to eat its young. I mean, they just fight each other, destroy each other, even in bad seasons for teams, you know, they could play spoilers. So this is a season where they're all over 500. They're all playing pretty well. So who knows what's going to happen when they all start playing each other. Right now, the Dallas Cowboys have a pretty solid lead. They're 8-1. It's just like Mike said, it's going to be hard to see them not win in 12 games. And I don't know that there's another team that can actually catch them. I don't know that anybody else is good enough. And I still wonder if Dak Prescott might take a step back at some point. But as I said, the way this team is built for winter football, for playoff football, with that offensive line that can just do whatever it wants, a star running back, Dak Prescott has great weapons, especially in Dez Bryant and Jason Witten. That is a team that, you know, they may have a little slump at some point, but really 4-3 down the stretch gets them to the 12th win, which might be enough to win this conference. I can't imagine them being worse than 4-3. They might even be, you know, on target for 13 wins or more the way they're playing right now. That being said, other than the way they're built talent-wise, I can make a good argument that the Giants and Redskins are pretty close to them. They're not as consistent, and they have more flaws. And it's going to be a really interesting battle, I think, between the two of them to see who gets second place. The Eagles, I've said all along that, you know, Carson Wentz, there are some flaws in his game, and they don't open up the playbook very much for him. It's too conservative an offense. He looked too shaky in the times I've seen him. When you get into the nitty-gritty of division football where the Eagles are already 0-3, I think the Eagles are the most likely ones to fall off. But the Giants and the Redskins, it actually might turn out to be a significant thing that the Redskins already beat the Giants once, a game that the Giants absolutely gave away, because these two teams might end up being in a big battle for the wild card spot. They might also be the two wild card teams. Don't discount that, because right now both of them are in position, and it really, this NFC East that everybody's been laughing at for so many years, starting to look like it might be the best division in football. I know you have to wait till that plays out until the end, but boy, it's hard to make an argument for any other division right now. It will only get better if they can pad their records. And this is what's staring at the Giants right now. The 2-7 Bears coming up, followed by the 0-10 Browns. Let's focus on the Bears for just a second. They found out that Alshon Jeffrey, their number one receiver, was suspended for 4 games. They've already been battered by injuries. There are reports now that the team is losing faith in quarterback Jay Cutler. And now they've got to come in to the Meadowlands to face a Giants team that is just on an absolute roll. You know, this is really it for the Giants. They've established themselves as a good team. If they really want to be a contender, they have to beat the bad teams in this league. There is no excuse for losing to the 2-7 Bears or the 0-10 Browns, the types of teams that they absolutely should just roll over. They have to be 8-3 when they come out of this 2-game stretch. Yeah, they can lose one and still be fine, but if they lose to the Bears or the Browns, it's going to be really hard to take them seriously if they have that kind of letdown, and it's going to sit in the back of their minds too. So, you know, it's not Armageddon for them if they lose one of the games, but this is what the great teams do. This is what the real championship contenders do. There's no excuse for a letdown. You worry about that, you don't know. I mean, the Giants have had letdowns a lot in the past. You don't know how they're going to handle things differently under Ben McAdoo. So you absolutely worry that one of these two games could be a minefield. But Ben McAdoo has to find a way to not let that happen, because the Giants right now have everything they ever wanted set up right in front of them. Because if they're sitting at 8-3 heading into December, you can start printing your playoff tickets in this mediocre division, because there's going to be no way that the Giants will fall short after that. All right, well, we've got a lot of time to talk about and write about the Bears game, even though it's a short week for the Giants. So make sure you stay tuned to all of my coverage of the Giants and Bears on SNY TV. And of course, at SNY.TV/Giants or SNYGiants.com. You can follow me on Twitter and get all the news there at RVacchianoSNY as well. My thanks again to Mike Garofalo of the NFL Network, and thanks to my guys back in the studio, Jason Pateri and Adam Schaefer. And thank you for listening. We'll see you right back here next week on the next edition of Giants Goal Line.
This has been Giants Goal Line, part of the SNY.TV audio network.